Hello, everyone. I'm Nate Truax, and you're listening to the Croccast Podcast.
Hey, guys, this is a little heads up. Towards the end of the episode, the guest makes a few strong political statements that I myself don't personally ascribe to. So just to clarify, this is the opinions of the guest and not me or the podcast as a whole. And with that out of the way, please enjoy the rest of the program.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Croccast Podcast. I'm your host, Nate. And today I'm joined by Dr. Vladimir Dinitz, author of Dragon Songs, along with a bunch of other books. Vladimir, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you want to get us started off on how you first got into reptiles and crocodilians in particular?
Well, I've been interested in zoology since I was a small kid, and I lived in a place that didn't have much reptiles. So they were always kind of exotic and fascination for me. And then finally I started traveling, and of course, there they were.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Moscow, Russia.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't have that many reptiles there.
Yeah, there's like 4 species in the whole area.
Oh, what are those species?
Common adder, grass snake, and 2 species of lizard, common and sand.
Okay. So you started moving around when I became an adult, and you started finding more reptiles. So how do you land on crocodilians in particular?
Oh, well, I joined a PhD program at University of Miami, and I came up with a few proposals for my PhD project, and they were all impractical or something. And then my advisor suggested looking at crocodilian communication, and so I did.
Okay. I've been reading through your book. I haven't finished it yet. But you mentioned in the book, you told the story of how you first heard alligators bellowing, and also how you first stumbled across their social dancing behavior. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, the alligator choruses have been known for pretty much forever. Native Americans were very well familiar with them, and the first European explorers as well. And a lot of people in Florida know what it is. Surprisingly, alligator dances didn't attract that much attention. Again, I found a couple Native Americans later who knew about them, but generally it wasn't known at all, which is quite amazing because it takes literally 15 minutes to see them if you live in Miami.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to go over what role this dancing behavior plays in alligator behavior?
I think it's basically the same thing as village dances. You know, if you come to a village and there is a wicked Santa dance and everybody shows up to communicate with people, some would show up with their partner, some would be looking for a new one. Sometimes you live with a different partner from the one you came with. And sometimes there are fights and sometimes people are just having fun.
Okay. So it's kind of like a social setting or gathering, like almost a... Yeah, I guess he's a village dance fits it perfectly, so.
Yeah.
So you did any more research with other species of crocodilians and look into their behavior?
Yeah, but none of them is as social as American alligators, so they're probably the most spectacular ones to watch.
All right. What other species have you done research with?
I did at least some research with almost all of them, except for Philippine crocodile, the 2 New Guinea species, and the ones that have been recently split in West Africa.
Okay. And how would you say, other than how social they are, how would you say their social behavior differs from the American alligator?
Oh, well, they have split a long time. Well, Chinese alligators are quite similar to American alligators. They're just less spectacular because they're like 1/4 of the size.
Yeah.
Some caimans are very similar. In particular, Yakari caiman of South America is very similar to American alligator, but again, it's smaller. Other caimans are less social, and particularly the dwarf caimans. Probably it's just because they have very low population densities. With crocodiles, it's variable, but generally they are not. They have different social system. Instead of this very flexible, very social, fluid structure, they have a rigid hierarchy. Dominant male sowing in the territory, this kind of thing. So there's just not that much space for socializing. There is much more space for fighting, though they fight a lot.
Okay. So they have a lot more rigid social structures than alligators do.
And then, of course, there is Indian gharial, which is totally unique. And I had very little time observing them, and I got some of the things wrong, as it later was demonstrated. But now there are papers coming out showing that they have very different and very fascinating social structure.
Okay. How is it different than the other crocodilians?
They have totally different system of signaling, and also they have paternal care. So in alligators, for example, you would see a few females joining with their offspring and forming these creches that they got together. But it's not on the same level as in gharials. In gharials, you could see adult males guarding those little creches or kindergartens, and there can be up to 200 babies surrounding the big male.
Okay. So, besides crocodilians, have you done any research with any other reptiles?
Well, I did some research on play behavior, and I worked with Gordon Burkhardt, who is one of the main researchers of reptile behavior. And recently, we co-authored a book with also Sean Doody from Australia on reptile social behavior, and I did a bit of research on this, but mostly the book is a review.
Okay. So what in particular drew you to want to study animal behavior versus other aspects of zoology?
A few things. I like watching animals. I don't so much like shooting them and putting them in alcohol.
Fair.
And a lot of other areas of zoology require collecting, which I don't really enjoy.
Okay.
And generally, if you work in another area of zoology, you have to focus on some group. And I just didn't want to do that because I find them all interesting.
Okay. So, with crocodilians, have you studied any other aspects of their social behavior? Or have you mostly focused on their mating and courtship behavior?
I mostly worked with signaling systems. But then some other interesting things just came up, and I had to follow the leads. And then I did a paper on coordinated hunting and cooperative hunting. Because sometimes crocodilians would hunt in groups, and there is some interesting division of labor and this kind of thing. And again, there were some observations before, but people just never looked at this in a systematic way.
Okay. So how do crocodilians cooperatively hunt?
Well, again, probably the species with the most complex behavior is, again, the American alligator. Sometimes when there is a pond about to dry up, they would divide into groups, and smaller animals would drive the fish into the shallows, and bigger animals would block the way. In Indian mugger crocodiles, also in giant ponds, you would see them like forming a circle, just like humpback whales do with their bubble fishing. And they drive the fish towards the center, and then they take turns running through the center and grabbing fish. Many species like Nile crocodile, saltwater crocodile, they would form barriers across rivers when fish are migrating.
Okay.
There is a place in Australia where you can see something like 100 big salties doing that.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I think I've heard about them sitting down in certain spots in the river for fish to come up. Had this ever been observed any cooperative hunting get aimed at larger game, like, say, larger mammals or something like that?
I saw one very fascinating case in New Guinea when three soldiers were hunting a pig, and one of them chased the pig into the water and the other two grabbed it.
Okay.
But it was just single observation, so there is no way I can prove that it was premeditated or anything, and just not a random event.
Yeah.
I found similar descriptions in very old literature, but again, they were anecdotal or something like that. So I still hope to get better documentation on this kind of
technique. Okay. The point I'm at in the book, in your book, which, by the way, great book to all the listeners. You should definitely try and check it out.
Thank you.
The point I'm at in the book, you're still trying to figure out why alligators both bellow and head slap. So it's going to be a minor spoiler in the book for me, but do you want to tell me what your conclusions are as to why they do both of these signaling behaviors?
So yeah, they have three main types of acoustic signals. They bellow, four types. They bellow, they produce infrasound, they head slap, and there are also some other things that they use at close range, like hissing and bubbling and this kind of thing. And my idea was that different signals spread with different efficiency in different habitats. For example, if you do a head slap, it carries very, very far through the water. But if you are in a small pond, and there's no point in it because it wouldn't go that far. So you have to bellow. Bellowing carries very far in broken aquatic systems. So I found that alligators that live in like big estuaries and lagoons, they do more head slapping. And the ones that live in small ponds do less head slapping and so on. So yeah, okay. They adjust their signaling to their habitat.
Okay. And have you noticed that behavior carry over to other species of crocodilians as well?
Yeah, there are some differences in the same way in Nile crocodiles that I studied in different places in Africa.
Okay. So they adjust these behaviors based on what type of body of water they're in.
Yeah. So my next question, of course, was how do they do it? Do they like consciously take this into account, or do they just learn to do it from others, or do they are they just born in different with different behavior depending on where they live? And I found that when the habitat changes, they don't change their behavior. So okay. my conclusion at the time was it was innate difference, but years have passed, and now I strongly suspect that it's actually a learned difference, that they learn their behavior from old generations of animals.
Okay, so you're saying that alligators that grew up in small ponds learn from the other alligators that live in small ponds.
Yes.
Versus the ones that live in larger rivers learn from the other ones. Okay. Oh, it's actually a pretty interesting bit of a learning cult. It's almost like culture, almost, between two different habitats.
So you see, when I started that research, I shared a lot of preconceptions that people have about crocodiles. And this possibility didn't even occur to me. And later, as I learned that they're much smarter than anybody thinks, it kind of came up.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, have you done, how much work have you done with the other large species of alligatoroid, the black caiman?
Not much, because they don't normally occur at high densities, and they are quite territorial. And it took me a while to find a place in South America where they were relatively easy to study.
Okay.
So yeah, I did a bit, but not as much as with alligators.
Okay. Are there any particular, any particular subjects on crocodilian behavior that you haven't studied yet that you want to study in the future?
Yeah, quite a few actually. I would really like to study the underwater hunting because very little is known about it. All we know is some bits of footage from creature cams, you know, when they put a camera on the alligator.
Yeah.
I would really like to learn more about their social structure, because especially for alligators, it's still very, very poorly understood. You need a whole population of individually marked animals to do a long-term study. There are some fascinating clues showing that, for example, some males and females would be preferred partners of each other for many years. They would come together during the mating season and preferentially mate.
Okay.
But it's never been really understood. We still don't know how the whole system works.
Yeah. It would be interesting to study those if you did like a DNA test of the clutch that female produces to see if there's a lot of other males in there, or if it's just the preferred male.
Yes, yeah, so somebody did that, and yeah, they have multiple partners, but they usually have a preferred one.
Okay. So reading your book, you've done a lot of world traveling. This is not really a travel podcast, but it's interesting. So what have been some of your most memorable adventures well, as a whole or also relating to your work with animals?
Well, I've been traveling in search of animals for almost 50 years now, and there's probably too many stories to tell. Yeah, I had a bunch of wild ones. But it's kind of all in the past because I have two children now, so I cannot take that kind of risks anymore.
Okay.
And generally, my recent trips are mostly very boring.
Yeah. Well, you're talking to someone who's never been out of the United States yet, going to Costa Rica in November. But let's say it's been your most memorable trip for research that you've ever gone on.
Probably the trip that I did with two volunteers to study Nile crocodiles. It was 4 months, I think, and we just rented a car and drove all over the southern part of Africa.
Okay, nice. Out of all the true crocodiles, which one have you studied the most?
The Nile crocodile, mostly. Also, yep. American crocodile.
Okay. I was about to ask about Nile crocodiles because I have worked with them a bit in the past in captivity. And they do seem to have a bit more social than some other species of true crocodile, specifically a salty, but salty's not really saying much.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing about Nile crocodiles is now we know that there are two species.
Yeah, the West African and the...
Yeah, the sacred and the proper Nile. And now everything we think we know about them has to be reevaluated and checked, and we have to find out what is sacred for which species and so on, because they're quite different in biology.
Yeah. It isn't true that the East African Niles are more closely related to Acutus rhombifer than they are to the West Africans?
So the East African was the ancestor of all American species.
Okay.
All four of them.
Okay.
And apparently there was just one female that swam across the Atlantic.
Okay, so very limited original gene pool then.
Yeah.
Okay. So working with your research on Nile crocodiles, have you found anything about their, well, both West African and the East African? Have you found anything interesting about their social behavior as compared to other species of crocodile?
Well, they occur at very high densities in some places. Like on Lake Turkana, you can see hundreds of them in the same place. And I expected them to break this hierarchical system with dominant males and stuff, but they somehow still have this. And males have overlapping territories. And you see them getting into fights sometimes, but not nearly as often as you would expect.
Okay.
So there is some mechanism that prevents fighting, but I don't know what it is. Again, we have very limited understanding of the social structure.
Okay.
So that's something that somebody should do at some point.
Yeah. So on Lake Turkana, we see these large numbers of Nile crocodiles. Do you see these males have very small individual territories that are just right next to each other, almost like a subdivision? Or are they individual males a lot more spaced out, and it's just there's a lot more females and smaller males that don't have established territory?
I tried to figure it out, and on different days I would see different things. Sometimes they would be extremely territorial and fight each other and chase each other. And you come back tomorrow and they just don't pay attention and they are basking side by side. I don't understand what is going on there.
Okay. I guess you probably, did you manage to observe or have an educated guess on how large individual territory sizes are in that area as they compare to other parts of the Niles range?
No, I have no idea. Okay. Again, it was different every day.
Okay, so they're just confusing then.
Yeah, people who studied them in different spots of the range said that it's something like about 100 to 500 meters along the river.
Okay.
But I don't know how consistent it is.
Yeah. It will be pretty interesting to study comparative territory sizes in different habitats. So,
yeah.
Food for thought. Have you had done work, some work with saltwater crocodiles? Where have you done research with those? Have you done that in Indonesia or India or Australia or somewhere else?
Mostly Indonesia and a little bit of Australia, but I haven't done much because there are so many other people working on them.
Okay. Okay, outside of the American alligator, what has been your favorite species to study?
Oh. Well, each one of them is interesting in its own way. There are different challenges. I really like to work with small forest species like dwarf crocodiles, dwarf caimans, just because not many people do it. Research is mostly on like conservation, this kind of stuff. But it's very difficult, and I never had enough time to do this properly.
Okay.
I would really like to spend some time with both gharials.
Okay.
And of course, I would really like to at least see New Guinea crocodiles in the wild, because I never have.
Yeah. Yeah. Both species.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm blanking on a question at the moment. Probably should have finished the book before I started this, but... what drove you to... I'm sorry about that. What do you think is the most interesting aspect of crocodilian behavior?
The social life, I think.
Okay. And in that social life, what do you think is the least studied and or most interesting part of that?
Well, the social structure, because it's so difficult. You can do it in captivity, you have to do a long-term study, you have to mark the animals. It's a huge undertaking.
Okay. Do you have any advice for people who are looking to get into animal research or ethology, what they should do?
Yeah, they should get a daytime job and do it as a hobby.
All right.
It's a wonderful hobby. It's a terrible career.
Yeah. Do you keep any animals personally?
No, I travel too much.
Okay.
We get animals sometimes for like holding over, like guinea pigs and stuff for the kids, but nothing serious.
All right. Is there any particular group of animals that you haven't studied that you wish to study sometime in the future?
Yeah, a few million.
Okay. Anyone that's up particularly high on the list?
Oh. Well, I always wanted to work with whales. I did a little bit of it, but not as much as I'd like to. I never had enough opportunity to work with cephalopods. I had a little bit again, but never had a chance to really get into it. In particular, I'd like to study them in the wild as opposed to in tanks.
Yeah.
Which is super difficult, and almost nobody has done this.
Yeah, I imagine that'd be difficult trying to keep track of animals, small animals that can fit into any nook and cranny in a coral reef.
Yeah, particularly the pelagic ones like squid and cuttlefish. You need a completely different level of equipment. I don't even think we have that yet.
Okay. So do you believe that your work in animal behavior can be used to tie in to help with other aspects of zoology like conservation?
I sure hope it helps with conservation. Of course, right now the main question about conservation is if everything going to be extinct in 70 years or not.
Yeah.
So not many people can look into fine points of like behavior and stuff.
Yeah. And okay, I can't think of any other questions off the top of my head. Is there anything else you would like to talk about?
A couple years ago, I went to Iraq
Okay.
to look for a very rare species of rat in the marshes. And I spent some time in the Iraqi desert in southern Iraq. And what I found was that the area is being basically sterilized by heat waves. All the camels have died, all the non-desert people have moved to cities because you cannot survive in the desert anymore, it's just too hot. All the mammals and reptiles and plants are slowly dying.
Oh.
So in a few years, we're going to see it in many places. It's probably going to happen in American Southwest, in North Africa. Huge parts of our planet will be uninhabitable and sterilized. And we really have to do something to stop this.
Yeah.
There is very, very little time left.
Yeah, so what would you say people can do to help with that?
I don't know if I can make political statements, but at this point, vote Democrat is the most important thing.
Okay.
Because if people will keep electing Republicans in 40 to 50 years, everybody will be dead.
All right. Okay, well, I can't think of any other questions, so thanks for coming on the show and giving me your time.
It was great talking to you. Thank you.